When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey Blenders, it's Sean O'Connell, the managing editor at CinemaBlend and a co-host of the Real Blend podcast, here to introduce you guys to a bonus episode of Real Blend. We have DD director Sean Wong, who we've been trying to get ever since we've heard good things about this film. I was able to catch up with it, heard a lot of buzz about it coming out of the Sundance Film Festival, was waiting for it to finally come around. Focus Features grabbed the rights to DD and are now putting it into theaters. Hopefully it's playing at a theater near you, and it's one you should go out of your way to see. Sean Wong has made this great coming-of-age teenage story that's rooted very much in, I'm not even going to say the John Hughes era of films. I'm going to skip over into filmmakers who are influenced by movies like Superbad, which does show up in this film. And as you're going to hear during the conversation with Sean, that he had it as part of an Oscar nominated documentary he did about his two grandmothers, and then also included it in this film. Really funny story that he tells, and goes to show the type of influence that a film like Superbad had on this up and coming generation of filmmakers. Ones that I'm going to sort of characterize by their conversational style of dialogue, and the way the characters act around each other and treat each other, and the way the close friends can be cruel to each other at times, but always with like a big heart, and that you're forming these experiences with really close friends at a formative age, and they're going to turn you into the person who you become. So as you can see with Dee Dee, as you get a chance to watch it, and talking with Sean Wong, he was raised by the skate culture in Northern California. That becomes a prominent influence in this movie. The choice of music that he uses in this, I think, is really pulled from that. And some of the other influences, and then the contributions of a filmmaker like Spike Jonze, is really important to Dee Dee as well, too. So if you like all of those things, or different elements of those things, you're going to want to give this film a chance. That's why we wanted to have Sean on the show to talk about his process and this theatrical debut that he's making that's turning heads all over the place. So without further ado, this is director Sean Wong coming on the Real Blend podcast on behalf of his new film, Dee Dee.
That's amazing. Thanks for having me. I'm a total geek, so this will be perfect.
You're in good company. This is such a personal film, and being semi-autobiographical, I'm curious just right off the bat, though, whose review of the film meant the most to you once you were able to finally show it? Someone professional or even someone personal?
That's a great question. No one's ever asked me this. I think, I've gotten to show it to a few people within like the skate industry that I got, like some of my favorite pro skaters, and
sure.
I won't out his name, but someone who really inspired me, who was one of my favorite pro skaters growing up. He came to our premiere and he sent me like the loveliest text afterwards, that he was like, I've never felt more seen by a work of art. And that was really meaningful to me. And then, and Spike Jonze, he moderated a Q&A for us, and there's so much of his DNA, like his work. He's the reason I became a filmmaker, and he voices a dead squirrel in the movie, but he saw the movie and moderated a Q&A for us. And he was just so complimentary about it and about how much he loved it. And so that was really, really big, so filmmakers I admired, like Spike, Hero, Mirai, and my mom, of course, my family. Yeah, sure. My mom really loved it.
Yeah, she wanted to see how candid you were going to get in it, I guess. I'm glad you brought up the skate community, because I think that's such an important aspect of the film, and especially the way that, especially in the skate community, which is something that I actually grew up in, but on the East Coast, you know, we tend to record as much stuff as possible. We recorded everything, you know, goofy stuff. That's just how you learned camera angles, you know, how you learned camera movements and stuff. And there was a moment in the film that broke my heart, and I don't know if it was supposed to have this impact, but the way that you lingered on it, when your lead character, Chris, deletes those 8 messages off his YouTube channel, and the impact of, like, he lingers on it as if, like, that footage is going to be gone forever. And these are his mistakes. These are the things that he learned. Can you talk about that scene and that sequence? And was it meant to be, like, you're getting rid of something that's really important here? This is vital footage.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think in the context of the movie, it was very much like I am deleting a part of myself to fit in with this other group that is the version of myself that I think I need to present, right? Like, they're only going to like me for my skate stuff. I don't want them to see my jackass ball kicking videos and, like, you know, sort of code switching and, you know, putting on the version of yourself that you want to present.
Sure.
But yeah, certainly, you know, I think there's a moment in the scene where I actually really love, it's before he clicks delete, his cursor, like, goes up just a hair. And to me, that really communicates, like, contemplation. And it's like, do I really want to delete all of these? Like, these are memories that I'm going to delete forever.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've certainly, like, thought of, like, even stuff I recorded, you know, not that long ago, and I'm like deleting it in the moment because I'm like, I need to free up space in my phone. And then, like, years later, I'm kind of like, damn, I wish I didn't delete that stuff. Like,
I wish I had
access to it. So, you know, I think a lot of us can understand how that feels to be like, I wish I had access to all those stupid things I recorded when I was like 12.
Especially, yeah, in our teenage years when, you know, now those memories are starting to fade and you just wish you could revisit them somehow.
Yeah, definitely.
I love all your song choices in this film. Like, right off the bat, they set a really peppy tone for it. I'm curious if there's a track in particular that you had to fight harder for than maybe you anticipated.
All the songs that, like, I'm really excited about in the movie, like the opening track, the ones that I had a playlist of songs I really wanted. Mm-hmm. I would say all the ones in the movie came pretty easily. Obviously, our music supervisor Toko was the one doing the sort of negotiations, but I think the bet that I took with this movie was that we should feature songs that were maybe lesser known and, like, weren't the, you know, Paper Planes or, like, MGMT that were in all of the sort of big movies in the late 2000s. We should find a way in that is bespoke to the world of the movie. So the opening of the movie, the Belle and Sebastian track, that was, you know, pulled from the skate series from a company called Krell Tap. And it's a skate series that I grew up watching ever since I was, like, in seventh grade. And they open every episode with that song. Okay. So it was very much, like, right off the bat, kind of like a nod to skating. And then, the Touchdown Turnaround song on the MySpace, that came pretty easily because I think all the artists and all the labels that we reached out to, they were, it was, like, very personal. You know, we didn't really even consider going out to any bands who were signed to major labels. Mm-hmm. It was always like, can we keep this a little bit more homegrown? So it felt like we had a personal connection to all the artists.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Yeah. I'm glad you got to choose that way. One of
but
the
we
things
didn't
I think
get a Mac Dre song. We really wanted a Mac Dre song. That was the one we didn't get.
One of the things I think that helps this movie stand out is just obviously the conversational tone and the delivery of the young cast. Is that something that you had to really work with them on and coach them on? There's a way that the dialogue is presented in the movie where it's almost like they're not acting, you know, they're legitimately just having these conversations. Is this something you worked on hard with them?
Oh, thanks, Sean. I mean, that's a huge compliment, but I think I can only take so much credit. Obviously, I think with the script, I tried as much as I could to get that tone in the script and even in the dialogue, but it all falls on the kids and the cast. And I think I really learned on this movie more than any other thing I've made is what they say, like 90% of directing is just casting.
Sure.
And I spent a lot of time in, you know, the casting process really, really kind of like auditioning with these kids and kind of doing so much improv with them, just because I think ultimately I was like, okay, I think even if they read the words and it feels stilted, if they improv, is there like an energy and an electricity that feels alive? Sure. And I think ultimately we were looking for real kids, you know, kids that who can just imbue these characters with a sort of visceral authenticity that was like, oh, that's like a real teenager, not some child actor who's trying to be like a real teenager. And 100%. I think so much of it was finding those kids who were, had that energy, and then kind of empowering them to make it their own. And I think the more that I kind of empower them to do that, and also the more comfortable they got in the sort of infrastructure of, because it's intimidating, right, to walk onto set and have there be a bunch of trucks and lights. I think the sure. more they got comfortable in that environment to just realize like, oh, it's just playtime, like we just get to kind of mess around. Obviously there's a script, but the more that we can kind of bring our own self to it, like they're like, oh, that's what they want, like yeah. then it became kind of easy.
Sure, because I'm fascinated by that with like when it's is such conversational nature, especially when it's like characters sort of cracking on each other, you know, making fun of each other, that has to have a rhythm to it. And if you have to have them do multiple takes, you know, like how do you recapture that energy? So I'm always kind of fascinated about how a director approaches it when it comes off as well as it does in your film.
Yeah, well, I think so much of it is sometimes learning that the take that was not the thing you expect, because a lot of the takes we use in the movie are actually like, I'd always give them a take that was like, break it, you know, do something completely wrong. Okay. Or like different, it can be anything you want as long as it's totally different than the last four takes we did, because we got it, but now let's just do something wild. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes they would come up with something that, again, like I couldn't have written it. It was just like, what the hell? Like, and a lot of that is in the movie. And then there were certain scenes where I kind of gave them a lot more liberty to just improv. And I knew that each take is a little different, but we would find the best pieces of our favorite versions of this scene in the edit. Yeah. And it was kind of, you know, sometimes I'd catch myself giving the wrong direction, which was, oh, that last take was great, let's try and recreate that energy. But again, it's lightning in a bottle sometimes.
Sure.
And you kind of just have to roll with the punches and know that if you get enough lightnings in a bottle, it'll have this great electric energy to it.
And did you find that in the edit then too, as you were putting that together? Like,
Sometimes, yeah, it was kind of being like, oh, this moment is so funny and it feels so alive. How can we kind of create the things around it to make sure that moment really shines? Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, we also find ourselves in a snag where it was like, oh, that moment is so good, but everything around it actually doesn't support that moment. So we actually have to let that moment be a little bit more subtle.
Can you give me an example? You know, can you think of an example?
Yeah. The scene where the boys first kind of meet up and they're at like the baseball field and they're at the picnic table and he's like, Fahad, and his voice cracks.
Yeah.
There was so much back and forth improv in that scene where it made the boys crack during the scene.
Okay.
And I just remember shooting that. I was like, this scene is going to be so funny. There's so much good stuff to play with. Mm-hmm. And there were, and once we got into the edit, it's more or less kind of as scripted, but I thought there was going to be so much material to play with. And I realized like, oh, like that scene, because it's the first time you meet them, it actually less is kind of more, it's just like kind of move the story along.
Sure.
And so it's kind of that, like, I thought that scene was going to be this like crazy banter, so many jokes flying back and forth, but really it was like exchange one, get in, get out.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, sometimes you gotta make the best choice for the movie ultimately, right? Whatever works best for it.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I have to ask about the influence of a specific film, which you choose to include, which is Superbad. What do you remember seeing that movie for the first time? Do you remember the impact that it had on you?
It's funny because I watched this, maybe TMI, but I watched that film for the first time on my friend's iPod on his toilet.
The whole movie? You sat there the whole time?
The whole movie. It was when you could load like the first gen iPods, you could load like full-on movies onto it. And yeah, I watched the whole movie in his bathroom on his iPod. It's a great movie. Maybe the best way to watch that movie, to be honest.
I need Seth Rogen to hear this somehow. I need him to know that this is how you watched it.
I've seen it in a bigger screen since,
yeah.
But the first time was on my friend's iPod.
And what grabbed you about it? Do you remember anything in particular that stuck with you about it?
I mean, it's just so funny, you know. It's not pandering to high school kids or teenagers. It really, it's stood the test of time, right? Like, I think it's such a snapshot of that time and that era, but I do think the reason it has become a seminal movie about, you know, teenagers and high school is because it really captured the way that kids talked. And even though it's crass and irreverent, kids are crass and irreverent, and it didn't shy away from that stuff. It really leaned into, I think, trying to find the heart and the irreverence. You know, it wasn't just like, remember when kids talked and said stupid stuff? It was like, I think it just wasn't very honest portrait, even though it's so, you know, big studio comedy.
I was really happy to see it pop up in your movie, because I was actually thinking about it while I was watching your characters all talk to each other.
It's so funny because this is a bit of a tangent, but I mean, Superbad was definitely an influence on this movie, but I actually didn't want them to be watching Superbad scene, because I did a short film called Nai Nai and Waipua that was like releasing kind of around the same time, even though I shot it 2 years ago before this movie. And in that short film, it's about my two grandmothers. They're watching Superbad. There's a scene where they're watching Superbad. And I was like, I don't want to have Superbad in both movies. Like, that seems, like repetitive and, you know, just like I'm repeating the same joke or something.
Sure,
but
yeah.
We auditioned different themes, and I learned, you know, on the short that to clear a clip like Superbad, you have to get so many clearances. You have to get the DGA, the WGA, the talent, and the, it's just kind of a headache. And we were kind of down to the wire. And I do love the clip that's super, it works so well for in the context of the movie. I think I was just self-conscious about like, oh, people are going to see that Superbad's in both films and they're going to think I'm a one trick pony or something. But it was funny because I had to, you know, we reached out to Christopher Mintz-Plasse and his team for the short, and they were like, yeah, for sure. That sounds awesome. Good luck with it. And then I had to reach out again, like a couple months later, I'm like, hey, it's me again, for a different, for a different movie.
Now he's your good luck charm. Now you have to use that in every film.
I know. I say this half kidding, but I'm like, I think there would be a great movie, just like the McLovin biopic, and it's, but it's him when he's like 40 and he's kind of like a burnout. Yeah. And he's like, in a, you know, he's not in touch with the super bad kids anymore. And he's kind of like, you know, this single divorced man.
It's like the Logan of McLovin.
Exactly. Exactly. It's just McLovin.
Please write that. I need you to write that movie.
Yeah. Someone get that rumor started.
That would be terrific. You talk about your casting, and the character of Maddie, I think, is so important to the film. You know, she's has to represent the unattainable. And can you just talk about what you saw in your young actress that made her perfect for Maddie?
Yeah, it's so funny because I remember, so Mahela Park, who plays Maddie, she was the first tape that was submitted and the first tape that I saw on our sort of like casting website. And I remember, and we auditioned like hundreds, thousands of kids over the course of 8 months. I remember watching her tape and I was just kind of like, whoa, she's amazing. Like the words don't feel scripted. Like she, it was so natural, but also so funny. I remember laughing out loud watching her tape, and it was the scene where, you know, he's like, did you get a haircut? And she goes, no. And I just remember, I was like, this is amazing. And I was like, she's so good. I was like, is every kid going to be this good?
Yeah.
And then it was like starting here. like, oh no, like needle in a haystack on the first tape. But that was something about her character too, was that she had to, you know, it's funny that you say like she is this, has to be this figure in his life that is unattainable, but she is actually, you know, she likes him.
Yeah.
Like she's interested and she's curious. And I think, Chris is the one that fumbles it, right? And I think to me, it was sort of this idea of, oh, she starts off as that, as this sort of like, you know, version of like, oh, the crush that is unattainable. But then the more that, you know, they talk and the more that you get to see her character, and so much of this is what Mahela brought to the character. But when they finally sit down at the playground scene and it is, you know, sort of like a 5 minute just scene of them talking, you realize like, oh, she's like super down to earth.
Yeah.
She's super cool, super funny, super chill. Like once you actually get to know her, it's like, oh, like they would be like cool and cute together. Like she's actually really, really sweet and not this like popular girl energy. She's actually really, really like nice. And then, you know, he kind of fumbles it himself and then kind of lies and then punches her friend in the face. And so it really was this thing where, you know, really whoever we cast, I think I really wanted her to bring, you know, this energy that wasn't like, I'm the sassy, cool girl.
Yeah.
It was it was like, I mean, I guess I'm, you know, maybe a little older and maybe popular, but like, again, like has interest and is very cool and sort of grounded.
Sure. If any girl asks, like, I want to need to ask you a serious question and then it's about ET, I'm in. That's it. You have my heart.
Yeah. I love the way she plays that scene. It was, she actually really helped us find Chris too, even though like she, we did a lot of chemistry reads with Isaac, but, you know, she did so many chemistry reads with us and for us and is so good at improv and is so good at thinking on her feet. And it was really like during the casting process, like every audition that she helped us with and every chemistry read, me and the producers would be like, dude, she's so good. How has she never acted before?
Right.
Like yeah, we could put her in any Zoom across anybody and like be like, okay, this is the scene, try this. And she just like lock in and we're like, and now she has like a manager and an agent and stuff, and she wants to continue acting. So
I hope so. She's incredibly talented.
Like she's really good.
Yeah, she really popped. One of the things that I think the movie touches on in such a fascinating way, and it kind of struck me because it's set in 2008, is how much the influence of creating content was still for teenagers at that age, and how much it is, you know, has evolved to 2024. Can you talk about your thought process about adding that into the script and how it was like it was something like the early stages of creating content? But I still remember like on MySpace and YouTube in those early days, the amount of putting videos up and capturing yourself as much as possible was still pretty prevalent and influential on these kids, I thought.
It's interesting because I think back then in the world that Chris inhabits, I wouldn't say that he has the vocabulary to be like, I'm capturing content, right? It was sort of pre-vlogger type of stuff. To me, I think the difference is you think of capturing content in the world now, it's selfie, it's capturing yourself. And I think for him, and I think for a lot of kids of that generation, it was still like outward. It was like very, you know, I think the kids in the movie are very inspired by like Jackass, right? Yeah. It was like this sort of era where you could just start recording things a little bit more. Like cameras were becoming a little bit more consumer friendly. Your phones could start recording stuff. And even though it was like 144p, you could just record stuff and throw it on YouTube. It was this era where I think people just had YouTube accounts and their YouTube accounts were like 7-second videos that they shot on their phone. Sure. It wasn't or curated. Vine. It wasn't, yeah, Vine or was, Vine. It was, you know, it was very pre-Vine too, but, you know, I think it wasn't even like content creation. It was just, oh, I filmed this stupid video, let me just upload it on YouTube. And I think even going back to like skating, I think there's just such a culture in skating of documenting things, recording yourself, and sharing it with your friends. And so I think, yeah, whether we knew it or not, it did feel like maybe the beginning of some sort of social media content capturing type of thing. But I think it was a little bit more innocent back then.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And then just to show everybody who's watching this how much ground this movie covers and how much I encourage everybody to go out and see it. The other aspect of it that really struck me was everything that's going on in Chris's home, specifically with his mom, and the difficulty of her trying to be a parent to the kids in front of her own parent, you know, like when you're almost getting judged by an elder, you know, while you're still trying to be the elder at the table as well, too. I found that relationship to be really fascinating. Does a lot of that come from your own experience? Is that stuff that was put into the screenplay because you went through it?
Yeah, but, you know, sort of maybe a version of it. Obviously, I think that relationship in the movie had to kind of do something for the story in the movie, right? And I think there was something that was so potent for me to mine. I think a lot of Chinese families, maybe Asian families altogether, but I can't speak on everyone, but just like living with your, you know, your elders, I think was something I experienced, but also I think a lot of my friends kind of had that sort of like multi-generational families in their household. And I think there's all, you know, the misunderstanding between, you know, Chris and his mom is already pretty vast, but then to have another, you know, person above that and then kind of have that perspective conflict with, you know, the mom's perspective that also conflicts with Chris's perspective. It just felt like, oh, this is really owing to mine. And it's sort of three generations of people not being able to see each other and understand each other and always having some sort of like cultural chasm that is just amplified by, you know, another generation.
Yeah, no, that struck such a nerve as I was watching it. Cause it's, you know, I'm a father of two boys as well too. And it's my mom's around a lot. So it's tough to parent in front of her as a parent as well too. So you're juggling a lot of stuff like that. I'll get you out of here on this one. You know, it's so rare nowadays to see writer directors, you know, people who are directing from their own screenplays and not just taking other jobs and stuff like that. Is that something you would like to continue to do going forward? Do you want to continue to work on your own screenplays and direct stuff that you write yourself?
Yeah. Is it rare? Is it rare these days?
I mean, you know, there's an M. Night Shyamalan, there's a Quentin Tarantino, but other than that, it's other, it's directors who are taking other people's scripts. So.
Interesting. Yeah, well, I mean, definitely I want to continue writing and self-generating, and but not in the sense because I'm like, oh, I'm a writer or director, but just because, you know, I think, you know, with this movie, I think it was this added thing of no one's going to give me a script to direct unless I write it, because I've never directed a movie before.
Sure.
And I think in writing this script and writing other, you know, shorts that I've done, I realized like, oh, I do really like the sort of seeing it from beginning to end and, you know, really writing something from, you know, sounds cliche, but like from the heart, and sort of asking myself like, okay, what do I want to, what story do I want to tell? What movie do I want to make that's not just something that's handed to me?
Sure.
And I think oftentimes it feels a little bit more pure and personal, and process takes a little longer, but, you know, I think it makes the process a little bit more fulfilling too.
Sure. Absolutely. Sean, yeah. Thank you so much for coming on the show, man. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Yeah. Good to meet you, Sean. Thanks for having me.
We want to thank our good friends at Focus Features for helping us set this up. And of course, for Sean Wong for coming on the show. He is welcome back anytime. We're going to be excited to sort of track his progress as a filmmaker and as a storyteller. I love as part of the interview where he sort of, you know, talked about the fact that being a writer director is something that's important to him, not becoming a bit of a hired gun. And I think the industry needs more of that, more people who are taking their personal stories and pushing them through the industry food chain to get, you know, their type of intimate visions and stories like this out there into theaters. It's important now more than ever, as we push back against some of the IP and franchises and things like that that we are getting. So championing. Thank you, Sean Wong, and films like Didi, which is really terrific and definitely worth your time. Speaking of really terrific, yet also a franchise, I understand I'm about to say this. Alien Romulus is coming to theaters on Friday. We will be back with a full episode this coming Friday, where we are going to review that film for you. And at the time that I'm recording this intro, it is still a hashtag. If it happens, Gabe and I even debated whether we should even include this in the introduction. But let's just say that should everything come together, we will have a special interview on behalf of Alien Romulus on the show on Friday. So call that a tease in the industry, friends. Tune in on Friday to see if everything came together. While you're here on the YouTube channel, hit like and subscribe. Share the show with a close friend of yours that loves movies as much as you do. And we'll be back with more Real Blend very, very soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.